Blog Talk Radio.
Said he's been sober. God, it's been so good.
Oh, hey. He's been good enough. He's been better than good to me.
God, it's head on my back in the midst of my enemies, and I ain't even have to be there. God took care of me and my children. I'm so connected to this air that I breathe, the ocean and the sea,
the mountains, the skies, and the trees.
I'm gonna get everything that belongs to me.
Good, just say good,
it's so good. Good.
Hey.
His love,
His love is so good.
And it runs
deep, deep, deep in my soul.
Oh, he's faithful,
man. I've made enemies become footstools.
But because I love him,
I don't mind giving them another chance to have a seat at the table. Come on, Jesus.
Hey, said he's been so good.
Good, just ain't good enough.
Yeah.
Hello, hello. I'm Verna Thomas Melton, your host for today, and I want to thank you for tuning in tonight as we bring you good news about doing business with the federal government with our special guest, Mr. Gregory James. Mr. Gregory James is a director, formerly of the Procurement of Technical Assistance Centers there at Cross Timbers, but it is now known as the Cross Timbers APEC Accelerator. So, Mr. James, I need you to press number one if you're there. I can bring you into the studio. I see you on the line, but you need to press one. Hello? Just press the number one, Mr. James. I see you there. So, but I want to tell you all that I first want to thank my board of directors. So while he's pressing finding that number one, I want to tell you all about the board of directors for the Brunner's Health Foundation, who is sponsoring this podcast. And this podcast is one of the world's largest platform that is heard all over the world. And I want to thank my board of directors for supporting me and doing what they do. Also, I want to also talk about the great upcoming legal clinic that we're having on May the 6th at the Mesquite Friendship Baptist Church at 680 Highway 80 in Mesquite, Texas. So the legal clinic, we have confirmed confirmation from the Judge Dominique Collins, Constable Deanna Hammond, Attorney Candace Haley, and the lawyers from the Legal Aid of Northwest Texas. Also, their attorneys will be Mr. Bruce Williams and Kelby Stuckey. The Verna Thomas Health Foundation also has a team of pro bono lawyers who work with us all the time and has worked with us all the time. And I want to thank them because they'll probably be on hand also on May the 6th, which includes Judge Victor Landers, Judge Audrey Moorhead, Attorney Cheryl Watley, Attorney Bree West, also Attorney Jimmy Agilino, Attorney Russell Wilson, and the dynamic judge again, Dominique Collins. I want to thank them for being on our team. They are a part of us, and I really appreciate their being there for us at all the time. So at this time, I want to bring on Mr. Gregory James. Hello? Mr. James, your telephone may be on mute. So if your phone is on mute, you're gonna have to take it off, or we can hear you. I see you there, but you have to press one. Okay. Gregory James is here online, but he's not coming in. Somehow we may have some kind of technical difficulties there with him. I may have to call him, and let me see, can I do that? Okay, if you all just bear with me just for a minute, because I'm going to have to call him. Apparently, he do not have... Okay. Okay, just wait just a minute, and let's see, can we call him? And if he will pick up. I am learning how to.
Hello?
Mr. James?
Can you hear me now? Yes.
I can see you now. You welcome.
I'm sorry for the. Apologize for the technical difficulty. You can blame it on my age. How's that? Look, I'm very happy. I want to thank Verna for giving me the opportunity to discuss with you guys government contracting. And I'm going to be, I do have a prepared structure, but before I get started with that, I wanted to kind of give you some overview opinions that I've come across to or developed over the last 20 years. Cross Timbers APEC Accelerator is part of University of Texas at Arlington, and I manage a contract with the Department of Defense. Are funded by the Department of Defense, Office of Secretary of Defense, and the Office of Small Business. Now, this became effective on the 1st of April, and what that has done previously to this point, it was the procurement, it was Defense Logistics Agency. So this change to the Secretary of Defense has changed our focus, and I'm very pleased tonight to be able to convey that message to you.
Okay.
All right. First of all, just let me say, I think over the years, I've had a number of calls from clients or potential clients that want to do business with the government. And my first thing to them is that, well, what do you want to sell to the government? And they don't come back and say, well, whatever the government buys. And that kind of response means that you're going to be a very long time trying to be successful in the government, in the space of government contracting. And I do mean both federal, state, and local. You should always know what you want to sell, and because that makes your path a lot more successful. The other thing is that I've talked to clients that have a socioeconomic classification, like women owned or service disabled or hub zone or NA. And the first thing I tell them is that when you're wanting to establish a relationship with a federal contracting officer, the first thing out of your mouth is, well, I'm a woman-owned business or a minority business, and that's the worst thing you could say at these early stages of developing relationships. And the reason why I say that is that they may have had a bad experience with a minority-owned company or an 8A or a woman-owned or service-disabled, whatever the certifications are, and then all of a sudden now that experience comes to their mind and they don't listen to what you have to offer. So let the minority thing, let the socioeconomic process come in toward the end, because what you want to do is sell your performance. You want to say, I can do this job. I know what your problems are. I can do it, and here's proof that I've done it before.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing, I'm sorry?
No, I was agreeing with you.
Oh, okay, good. And the other thing I want to talk about is I know this sounds really simple, but you need a signature block. You need to have, every time you send an email out, at the bottom should be your name, your title, you know, your company name, contact information. There's so many emails that I get, that we get at UT Arlington, that they don't even put their phone numbers down at the bottom. So contracting officers are very unforgiving when it comes to not following certain procedures and certain steps. So you always want to have a signature page and when you send things out. And please, your email should be in the domain name of your website. A lot of people sign in SAM and they use a Gmail account or they use their AT&T account. They have a website, but they won't use that domain name in their email. And that's a red flag. So we want to make sure that you know, people kind of understand what I call the etiquette side of government contracting. And then they, you know, and I think if you understand that up front and have those, you know, those qualities in mind, I like to call them professionalism, then I you'll be much more respected and be able to, you know, to have some success. Okay. So. Now, let's talk a little bit about the technical asset opportunities here. So what we do at Cross Chambers is provide technical assistance to clients that, one, have a demonstrated past performance. They've done something, and so now what they want to do is expand their business. And we also help some startup companies that have an innovative idea that you think, and then we review it, and we think, okay, the warfighter can use this. So then that's called a small business SBIR, a research process, and you get startup money, and it's called a seed capital to government, at least federal government project. So, So the first thing I think, if you do want to do business, you have to register. And I know registrations are there's no one single place where you can register your company with all government entities. We know on the federal side that it's SAM.gov, the system for award management, and you know that's where you register your company. And after some vetting of your business address, your company name, and all those kinds of things that they double check, you receive a cage code. This is at the federal level. Once you get that cage code, now you're ready to start bidding on government, on federal contracts. When you look at the state, it's the CMBL, Central Masters Bidders Board. In fact, you can bid on a state contract. If you're registered with the state of Texas, then you can bid on their contracts as a client. And then, of course, each local government, including the city of Dallas, city of Fort Worth, county, all these different local governments, I call, have their own registration process. So you can end up spending quite a bit of time and just registering your company with the different government levels. Of procurement. That's why I think it's always important to figure out where do you want to sell your product. Is it to the state, or is it something that the federal government needs, or is it something that the city of Dallas will purchase? So it's good up front to know where your product, where your service fits, and then you decide, okay, I think this is good for the city of Dallas, so let's spend 10 hours or 5 hours, however long it takes, to register your company. Now, with that registration, both at the federal and the state level and the local government, they want you to have a primary NAICS code. These are North American classification codes. And this code, and then at the state level, the NIGP code, they call it, at the state and local governments. But these are important at the federal level for sure, because the federal government likes to classify economic activity. So they use the NAICS codes for classification of industry. So if you're in the construction industry, then there's a set of NAICS codes, or North American NAICS, I like to call them, available, and you should put that in your SAM registration. And then with the state of Texas and with the local governments, you know, they have an NIGP code, so you want your, you know, they want you to classify your products into these categories. So that's the next code. The next thing, part of the registration, and especially at the federal level, is the federal supply classification. So what the government does, what the Fed does, they classify you in an industry, and then they classify the products that they buy. And these are called product service codes or federal supply classifications. So you want to make sure you know what that classification is, and you put that in your SAM registration as you're going, you know, as you go through the process to get approved. Once you're approved, then the SBA will, this is at federal government level, the SBA will come and take information out of your SAM and then bring it over to their database, which is called the Dynamic Small Business Search. And so you have a profile there, and because you've been designated as a small business, and you know your NAICS codes, whatever criteria is used, and then you go into their database. One of the good things about, one of the things you have to do, you know, once you've registered, even if you have registered and you've been registered to do business with the federal government, it's always good to look at your small business profile to make sure it's up to date, make sure you filled in the right columns or right sentence, you know, columns that they requested that wasn't in your SAM. But this is, it's now they would like to have like a capabilities there. They would like to have references listed. And this database is extremely important because this is where contracting officers, prime contracting companies like Lockheed Martin and all those guys, this is where they go to find you. And so you want to make sure that, we always want to make sure that what the information that is in your SAM registration syncs up. That's a new term, and it's been a while, but syncs up with the information in your SBA profile. It needs to be consistent. If there's any inconsistencies, then the contracting officers will go to the next vendor. You know, you're in a very competitive environment when it comes to at least federal contracting, and I think government contracting across the board at all levels, very competitive, and so contracting people don't, you know, if you don't meet certain qualifications up front, they won't even bother to read your proposal or solicitation. So that pretty well covers kind of the registration part of doing business with the government. Bert, I didn't know if you want to, if there'll be questions maybe now or at the end. If not, I'll just continue.
Well, no, I want you to continue, because what this is, Mr. James, is that I know a little bit about your agency that is a little bit different from what SBA and GSA can
yes.
do. Your company,
right.
What you all do, you actually can counsel one-on-one with people or either have them to come out there to see you and talk with you, and you do a lot of information seminars online.
Yes, ma'am, we do. And that's part of our mission. You know, one-on-one counseling is very important, because
mm-hmm.
that helps to establish, you know, I can talk to you either virtually or in person and kind of begin to understand what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we provide technical assistance. Now, since we've changed over, you know, we started in 1985, and up till April 1 of 2023, we were basically providing counseling to all businesses, small, large, startups, and the whole thing. Well, that's ended. The Department of effective April 1 now, the Department of Defense says we only want you to work with companies that are proven, that they have a track record. Maybe they're already doing defense industry type work, defense industrial base, and so they just, you know, you guys help them improve, get more contracts, or they're in the government industrial base. And once again, they have classified, you know, our clients into defense clients that support the defense industry and clients that are support government across the board. So they fine-tune a little bit how we can help, who we can help, but we're always open for conversations, telephone calls, and just kind of what I call roadblock kind of things that can kind of, if you don't even have the experience, well, if you do this, and this, and eventually you'll have it. So, yeah. So we're a little bit different than any of the SBDCs or even the DFW Minority Supplier Council or the Women's Business Council. We provide technical assistance, so we're right there on the, you know, we're holding your hand, so to speak.
Yes, I Gregory, you know, when I came out there, it's been quite a time. It's been a long time ago, but you all had some guys from upstate, and they was actually with the Department of Defense, and one of those guys gave us his card, and he was so personally wanted to really help people and to try to get them contracts with the Department of Defense. Now, today, I had to, and the reason why I'm saying this, because I know you just had a cybersecurity workshop.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
I want you to explain this, because I had to go through the Department of Defense to get my U.S. Joint Certification.
Yes, that particular...
They had to get my computer number. They had to get where this computer was going to be located, what address it was going to be, and all of that, because
it's
so much security that the government have to make sure that we do as small businesses.
Right.
Would you kind of explain that, too? Because a lot of people
know
that, and I really want to help so many people. Mr. James, it's imperative that I do what I do because, and I volunteer a lot of my time trying to do this. Like this is all volunteer because God's been really good to me.
Sure.
If it hadn't been for Willie Roe Heath from GSA back in the 80s, I don't think
I
would have known.
I refer clients to Willie today.
All
the time. Want a GSA schedule. Yeah.
He was such an humble servant of God, and when he told me, the Walkman. Me and him went to school together. We graduated together. But,
cool.
So I actually, I'm just, you're trying to say we're old, but I'm really.
I know.
that.
Let me kind of lay the land for you guys. National security is the most important, one of the most important things that we have to recognize and accept the threat that are out there to do us in, okay? And so being part of, because I am funded by the Department of Defense, I have to make sure that vendors, suppliers are complying with what we call cybersecurity regulations. So, ladies and gentlemen, please understand that it's painful, it's costly, and what's going to probably happen is that the number of small businesses that are doing business with the Department of Defense, as it relates, I'm not talking about janitorial or that kind of function. I'm talking about people that are in IT, people that they want to provide services. They're going to have their systems in compliance or they will not get a contract. And we had just left, I just came back from a meeting in San Diego with with our you know, with the guys in the Office of Small Business, and I said, hey, are y'all aware of what the compliance cost is going to be? And that they want us to bring more manufacturers in. They want us to bring more machine shops, you know, more companies that make products that the warfighter needs, and mm-hmm. to keep our national security safe, to keep all of us safe. So our focus then is to help those companies with the cybersecurity guide. So let me get into that. There's two things real quickly. First of all, is that, and by the way, we help our clients understand what these requirements are, and we help walk them through it up to a point, and then you know, it's up to them to carry, you know, to carry the, you know, to get whatever additional information they need done. But this is paramount. And by the way, I do believe that the federal acquisition regulations that apply to all federal agencies will soon have a cybersecurity requirement. Okay, so there are two issues. There are two points right now. One is what we call a DFAR, which is a defense federal acquisition regulation. We also have the NIST 800-171 regulations, the National Institute of Technology in the Department of Commerce. So first thing you have to do is do self-assessment. You have to assess. You have to answer 100 questions, yes, no, maybe, working on it. And once you answer those questions, then you submit it to a database called SBARS, and then contracting officers then will look at your score and at least know you're starting the process. So you have to do the self-assessment. You also have to do a system security plan, and that's resource intensive. But basically, when you do your self-assessment, you know what your weaknesses are. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, this whole cybersecurity thing, it applies primarily to manufacturers, IT people, people that are making critical products and our services, and so if you're a distributor and you're reselling a product, then you don't have to comply as much as say if you're a manufacturer or something like, or a construction contractor or an IT company. The requirement's getting a little heavier at that point. But you have to have a system security plan, and then plan of action, how you're going to solve those problems that you identified in your self-assessment. So that's the first phase, okay? And it's important. It really is. Right now, there's no right or wrong on the numbers, on the score. But at this point, they just want to make sure you are in the process of complying with the regulations. Because it's going to take, unless you're a very large company, it's going to take a small business. And they're going to have to decide whether or not they want to do business with DOD if they're in that requirement stream. You know, if you're getting information and you know, if you're in those critical NAICS codes that you know, that they want you to have. So it's a challenge, guys, but you know what? It's a cost to do it. So you have to decide, do you want to do it? And then, in fact, and then we anticipate that all federal agencies within probably 12 months will require some sort of cybersecurity compliance reg. So that's the first thing. The last thing is what's called CMMC certification. And I know most of you probably have heard that term, CMMC. And so what that basically means, at some point in time, I'd say within the next 18 months, that there will be assessors or auditors, I like to call them, that will come into your company and look at all your paperwork involved in this compliance. And then they will give you a level of security from CMMC, actually, level 1, a level 2, and a level 3. And so once you get those designations, you'll only then contracting people will issue contracts that they say falls into level one, level two, and level three security. So you'll only be able to bid on those contracts that you have the cybersecurity numbers, CMMC number to bid on. And that will happen, I'd say, within the next 18 months. And depending on the size of the company, it's like, you know, the DCMA, Defense Contract Management Audit Companies. You know, they have, this is an agency that audits vendors' compliance to all the rules while they're making the F-35 or whatever it is. And they're out there in Lockheed Martin. They have a whole suite of offices. For small businesses, you know, they'll just come in, evaluate what you've got. And, oh, by the way, you got to pay for that. See, that's the kicker. Mm-hmm. And we've seen prices as high as $30,000, $40,000 that you would pay an outside auditor that's been licensed to come in and evaluate your compliance. And there's no guarantee you're going to get it. So it's an interesting process going on, and I think I do see the necessity of it. I do understand that it's going to require a certain level of sophistication in your mm-hmm. business. I mean, we have clients that they can't even operate their laptops, and so are they candidates to, you know, to do business with federal government? I don't know. But mm-hmm. it seems like it would be difficult, more difficult, because they have to have these compliance costs.
Right.
So, yeah, it's here. It's here. In fact, this rule has been in place since December 17, 2017.
I'm going to have to come by and talk with you at your sure. office, because we have several manufacturers that we're bidding on a lot of like you said, military projects.
Okay.
And even though I am not the actual manufacturer, I have to do so much of that contract, whereas I have to secure that COC.
Right.
I have to secure the COC.
Right.
Okay. Before they even ship, I got to make sure that packaging is right. So that's why I have to actually visit with the manufacturers before they ship. Now,
yeah, because there are standards for even shipping.
Yes.
Military shipping.
They never told me I had to pay $30,000. I hope they don't pay $30,000.
Well, no, this is never, and remember, that number is on the cybersecurity side of things.
Okay, but anyway.
In other words, what I'm saying, when CMNC goes into play officially, an auditor will come in and determine the level of your compliance to CMMC, and it's not going to be cheap.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you say Lockheed, but Lockheed, for instance, they are one of the prime. They're a prime vendor with the government. Am I correct? They do a lot of work.
Yes, ma'am. They are. Yeah, they're in probably the top two or three in the country.
Okay, but like for instance, if a person had a let's say they had a trucking company. Could they get business with? They was a small business. They don't have to go through all of the COCs and cybersecurity if they're going to be actually, for instance, doing deliveries for Lockheed.
Mm-hmm. A lot of that depends on what those deliveries are, man. If you're a trucking company and you're delivering missiles from point A, like from Lockheed Martin, you know, their missile facility in Grand Prairie, then it just depends on what it is. If you're moving furniture, I doubt that would be a problem. But here's the thing. That prime contractor has to flow down all their requirements to you as a sub.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's part of the rule. So whatever, you know, in flow down clauses in cybersecurity for sure, they have to flow it down to the suppliers, because the U.S. government, Defense Department, wants the whole supply chain. doing, you know, with cybersecurity. So if I, let's say Lockheed Martin, they really don't build anything. They assemble things. Let's say at the Fort Worth plant, F-35. Mm-hmm. They assemble things. So they have maybe 2,000 or more subcontractors that make the parts, ship them in, and then the guys, you know, on the assembly line, they take one part, fit it into, you know, you know what I'm trying to say. They take these parts from all these subs. So all their everybody in the supply chain has to comply with the cybersecurity regulations.
Okay.
They have to. And, you know, it's just the state of the world that we're in now.
Mm-hmm.
And I love my country. And I'm sure as hell glad I'm here. And I know a bunch of people are. So we have to protect that, okay? And it's painful. But it also, by the way, too, if you do comply, your business goes up tremendously.
Right, right.
We've had a client that has done a machine shop up in Denton, and they've done very well on the compliance scale. Now they're turning away business because they have a competitive edge now over their competition. So contracting people, it has been, and they're a small machine shop up in Denton. But contracting people, it's kind of like the 8A program. You know, you've heard where if you do well as an 8A contractor, then contracting officers will feed you more jobs. Well,
uh-huh.
in this case, if you are in compliance with cybersecurity, they will feed you more jobs. And you do a good job. I mean, you still have to do a good job, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But if all the apples are, you know, if everything's compared to the same, then you'll get more work than the competitor that's not even there on this compliance issue.
Let me ask you something. For instance, I have some friends that's actually cybersecurity certified. They had to go to school for all of that. How do they get in the government to be certified with the government to work with cybersecurity?
Okay, so they set up back in 2017 kind of a private sector, public sector, or nonprofit was set up, and it's called CMMC-AB, and they're the accounting board. They're the board mainly made up of private sector individuals now, and their job is to certify about 5 or 10 different jobs that are related to helping small businesses comply. Now,
mm-hmm.
when a client comes to us and says, well, you know, I mean, we do what we can do up to that point. University doesn't allow us to get into some of the more detailed stuff. And so when we make a recommendation to a client that, okay, you need to talk to these two IT companies or these two companies that specialize in this, make sure that they're certified. And I mean certified by the CMMC board, because mm-hmm. you can, you know, it's a different situation. If you're in the IT world, yeah, a lot of them, you can take classes on this, but this is a little different. And by the way, the focus of the compliance is really on human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
what I mean by that, you know, there are, they call them families of control. And so all these 110 questions are divided into about 14, 15 different categories. And the majority, I mean, you know, you can tighten up your systems, okay? You can get better technology in there. But the real issue with cybersecurity compliance are the human beings. So how often do you change your passwords? You know, a lot of people, I know at UT Arlington, my password changes about every 6 months. And
mm-hmm.
that, you know, it's a pain, but I understand why I'm doing it. There's some companies that, you know, you get a password, great. You keep it, small business. They don't, you know, they don't think about that. Well, what happens when that person leaves? So, I mean, there's human beings. They click on emails that they should, you know, in the workplace now. They'll click on an email that opens them up for a hacking. And they don't know who sent that email, but they just click on it. So that kind of behavior in the workplace, you know, has to be addressed. And by the way, we're putting on a workshop on the behavioral aspect of compliance. And as Dr. Cheryl Carr will be doing it, it'll be posted on our website. But, you know, she's a psychologist. She wanted to focus on the human, not the technical routers and all that kind of stuff, but what human beings need to do in the workforce or what company managers need to be looking for. So, you know, let me give you one last example. We had a client that had a machine shop, and they had these what we call CMMC machines. And these are machines that create or build metal parts. And so these machines are networked in their company. So this guy, the machine operator, he had his computer set up. He put the materials in this machine, pushed the button, started working, and then he starts to play with his social media site, like Facebook. All of a sudden now, that company is hacked. And that company the hackers hacked them through this employee's use of social media on the machine that was making the part. And they happened to be a subcontractor to a prime. The prime caught it, okay? But the small business didn't even know about it. So, you know, these are the kinds of things that I'm saying that, you know, guys have to be a lot more aware in their control and their management of their company if they want to do business with government. And I don't think the state and local governments have gotten to this point yet. But definitely at the federal level, cybersecurity is huge.
Greg, let me share something with you. I read an article by Jared Serbus, and Jared is works with WFED. He writes for that column, and he's talking about how he stated about the federal defense. A separate lost 3,300 in 2021. And this was, I guess, this was small businesses probably. And so I'm trying to see the government at this point, they have an executive order that's worth $650 billion. $650 billion what the government purchases. 20 or 25% of that must go to small businesses. Okay, now what you're talking about is the Department of Defense. And what I want people to know, there are more agencies besides the Department of Defense. You have to be able to secure your computer when you're working with the government, but there's more opportunities out there besides the Department of Defense. For instance,
without a doubt. I mean, Department of Agriculture, and, you know, if you're in the academic research areas, NSF, National Science Foundation, Health and Human Services, federal government buys a lot of stuff.
The question is,
this cybersecurity thing is somewhat limited to certain items, right? So it doesn't, at least at this very moment. I mean, it can all change, you know, once the Federal Acquisition Regulation Board finally settles in on the final rule. But they buy a lot of stuff. So certain things like pencils and paper, clothing, you know, the cybersecurity thing won't be that crucial unless you're making a uniform or something that's got technology in it. Okay. But if you're just doing socks and just the basic stuff, you know, the compliance with cybersecurity regulations aren't as crucial as, you know, or I'm not going to say, well, you don't have to follow the same kind of compliance rules that say if you make something or if you go and build something. I mean, we've heard stories where contractors win a bid and they go down I think one of them went down to Fort Hood. There was a contract there. And the contracting officer sent this guy the plans for the whole base, every building. So that wasn't the right thing for that employee to do. But this guy had access to everything. So he could have been hacked, right?
Right.
And then so our enemies would have known exactly where to shoot the bombs on a particular location on a base. Now, they could probably do this anyway. They don't have to, you know, because of, you know, drones and satellites and stuff. But it's very important. And I think the more that people, you know, business owners now take it serious, the better off, you know, we will be as a country, without a doubt.
Right, right. And I really appreciate what you all do there at Cross Timbers. In fact, I'm going to be open for Tuesday. And you're going to have to make some time for me to come by there and talk with you while I'm in Forward.
I will make the time, no doubt. Don't worry.
I'll come by there when I leave. I have a big breakfast to go to over there Tuesday morning. So,
okay.
But I'll come by there probably at lunchtime and have lunch with you.
Okay,
Gregory,
no problem.
It's important. It's so important because I have a lot of very small businesses that want to get started. And I've told some of my friends who does catering, who been caterers for the longest, been in business for cooking barbecue, cooking chicken, things like this. And like I was telling them, some of these agencies, like Lockheed or General Motors, that have some of these big federal contracts, possibly would want a caterer every now and then.
Oh, sure, yeah, most of them do, yeah.
And
that's
then they want to set up, you know, just like, for instance, John Peter Smith Hospital has McDonald there. Okay, we don't know who owns McDonald, but I've been talking to other people, telling them, well, why don't you try different hospitals, especially if they get federal grants, especially some of these veterans hospitals, that possibly to do, put in your services as well, or your menu. So like that, can they come out?
But I understand too. That's a big jump from just doing catering to now you're doing food service, right? You think?
But they can come out there and talk with you about that as well.
Yes, ma'am. I think one of the things that I feel much better when I'm able to help a client decide, you know, where they want to sell their product.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not be Department of Defense. It could be, like I said, Department of Agriculture. It could be, I haven't seen cybersecurity regs on, you know, corn or production of corn or any of the food SaaS, but, you know, there are other rules, right, that they have to follow to make sure that corn's not contaminated and all that good stuff. So yeah, we that's what we like to do is help them understand what they have versus what the government buys.
Well, the reason why I said the Department of Agriculture, Gregory.
I sell
feed bags.
Feed bags.
I sell boxes to nurseries who actually put those wax boxes. They put seeding in those wax boxes to grow trees for the farmers.
Oh, wow.
We don't have to go to site security because of that.
No, I don't think you will. So,
that's a
But what I would caution everybody, federal, state, lead the solicitations, read the contracts. We have so many people that don't read, and so what happens? You miss something. You know, we had a housekeeping client that had won a contract and on a military base. Well, one of the things that they had to says, well, the guy said, well, I can't vacuum, I mean, wash these rugs every month. I didn't put that in my bid. He says, well, it's in your contract, and you signed it. See what I mean? So it's important that people understand what they're getting into. Maybe that's why that we have lawyers. But, you know, it's important that you read it. And so I say that to say there may not, if it's not in the solicitation, then you don't have to worry about it. How's that? Cybersecurity.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about it.
And one of the things, too, people need to know, the government buys two things. They buy service and they buy product. Make sure you understand what you're bidding for. If it's for service, that means that you're going to have to work. You got to help people, then you got to service that contract. If you're going to sell products, that means you only have to sell your products. Make sure this is shipped correctly, packaged correctly, and things of that sort. So that's one of the things I'm trying to get to over to people to understand what you actually want to do with the government, how you want to service the government.
Yes, indeed.
Gregory, let me share something with you. The United States Postal Service is a federal agency. If I had a truck and I wanted to get a small contract to just run mail, but I mean, you know, within 150 miles, how do I get that contract with the United States Postal Service?
Yeah, I mean, I've got clients doing that right now. And now the Postal Service, there's certain agencies that fall that are not subject to the federal acquisition regulations.
Mm-hmm.
And these usually apply to independent agencies like the FAA. They have their own regulations. And I kind of say the post office has their own acquisition regulations as opposed to, you know, what's out there, the rest of the agencies, what I call FAR. Federal acquisition regulations, which apply to all the agencies except for those independent ones. But, I mean, you know, I've got a client now that wants to bid on it. I'm bid on a job for mail and carrying mail. And you know, the key thing there is being able to identify what you're capable of bidding on doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, people get big and nice and they go, oh, if I get this $100,000, $500,000 contract, it's going to save my company. Well, maybe that $500,000, the margin on that thing may only be 3%, you know? So 93% of that contract goes to expenses you got to spend anyway. So it's important, I think, to look at, you know, strategically, you know, one, do I have the finances? You know, do I need more than one truck to bid on this thing? And I usually tell my trucking companies that, you know, if you just have one truck, you won't be able to do well with federal government because those kinds of jobs are just not there for one truck. Now, if you got a fleet of trucks and you have interstate carrier capabilities licensed, so you can get contracts with the Department of Defense, if nothing else, to move people from point A to point B. So, but you'd have to have the capacity to do it. So sometimes, you know, you got to work toward that. You know what I mean? You have to have a plan and say, okay, how do I build my capacity up so that I can make money on this particular federal contract? So, you know, we look at it like, okay, it's a learning experience. You know, let's bid on it and see what happens. You bid on it and see what happens and go from there. But there's no sense in bidding on something that you don't have the capacity to produce or perform. So, these are the kinds of things. I mean, I'll tell them, you know, hey, I have free advice. we can speak, you know.
Right.
We can talk about what we think is real, but what reality is like. And so that helps to level set the vendor. And sometimes I know they get depressed after they talk to me. Because you can tell in their voice, they get so enthusiastic. And then I start laying in what I think is real. And then so they have to rethink. And I said, hey, yeah. I like your enthusiasm. I want you to be motivated. We need entrepreneurs. You know, we need to build wealth in the community. And so, yeah, I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
Okay. We have a question. We have somebody who's raised their hand. They want to ask you a question. So if you don't mind, let me get them in here and get their question. Go ahead, sir. 877-808. Hello? You're on the air. 817-808.
Sorry, I had myself muted. I want to, first of all, thank you for a great show, Werner. Really appreciate this show tonight. A lot of information, though. A lot of information. Almost intimidating, I would think, to some. So what I would like to do for Mr. James, is there a way you can give us just a list of websites to write down to kind of from start to just from a beginner standpoint? Please.
What I'd like to suggest you do, thank you. We have what I call a client assessment survey, which we cover. In fact, we cover the things that I talked about tonight, and some more. I'll give you my email address. Send me an email, and I'll send that to you. Okay, that's the best way to do it, because it's a couple pages, and it's got a lot of different websites in it. But I think they're pertinent to, you know, being successful. So it's gjames@uta.edu. Or you could Google .edu. Yeah, gjames@uta.edu. Or you can Google, Cross Timbers, UTA, and our website will come up. So, but it's easy. If you just email it to me, I'll forward that document to you.
I appreciate that. Great show, though. A lot of good information. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. And Mr. Dave, I want to say this to everybody. We just about a little bit out of time, but one thing about this show, I can go from 1 hour to 2 hours, but I try to get people off at 9 o'clock, but we can always go over. They don't mind. We pay for 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours a day, but we don't have to go 2 hours. But I want to let people know that Cross Timbers is not really on UTA campus. Am I correct? It's not on the campus.
Well, we're in the Fort Worth. We're in the Fort Worth campus. So the main campus is in Arlington. And then we have a campus in downtown Fort Worth, just right next to where the A&M or the train station. And I'm located in our research institute, which is at Randall Mill and Jack Newell Boulevard. So we're in that 820 Randall Mill corridor. Jack Newell Boulevard, and it's Henley something, but it's right off of Rosedale, so you can't miss us.
Right. We have another caller. I want to get this caller before we go off. Okay.
Okay. Very good.
Go ahead, caller, at 610-809.
Yes.
Hello.
I just want to say I really enjoyed your topic of conversation.
Yes, ma'am.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello? Oh, could you hear me? Oh, I'm sorry. I just want to say I really enjoyed your program this evening.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Okay. And Mr. James, I want to say something before we go. I really want to thank you because you're always there for us. The Werner's Hemp Foundation has always, when we have our workshops, you're always there. You come out with GSA, NSBA. And I really thank you for your time, giving us your time. We all have to.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
We all have to volunteer sometimes and do our best. I think I'm the only one volunteering. I think y'all be getting paid. You.
Well, to be transparent, it is part of our mission is outreach events.
That's okay. I love that. I'm helping people. And I enjoy that.
Yeah.
And I want to tell people again about, we do have a workshop on May the 6th and I want you all to realize that this is a workshop to help people with all type legal problems, from domestic problems to we've had children being taken, and these lawyers is on top of it already. And so when they call me before May 6th, I always send them to a lawyer that's going to be at our workshop. So we're going to have some great lawyers there with free advice. It's not anything. And that's going
very
to good. Be at the Mesquite Friendship Baptist Church. Also, next week we have Bridget Moon from SBA. Bridget is a fantastic she's a leader there with SBA, but she also works with the veterans. The veterans as well as spouses for veterans. And a lot of spouses did not know that could be a veteran small business because they were married to veterans, but they don't know that.
Right.
So Bridget Moon is going to bring some fantastic information on next week, as well as the veterans. One of our board members, he's the commission for the Veterans Initiative, which is they help veterans get these small homes. So they have a breakfast forum every third Saturday. Every third Saturday, they have this breakfast over in the Singing Hills area, right off of University Hills Boulevard, 7303 University Hills Boulevard. So if they're interested in that, the veterans, they need to come out to that breakfast every third Saturday. They'll be there helping them with housing. So we're excited about being able to volunteer as much as we do. And to just to stay out here helping people, and we're all in this together. I mean, you know, it's not about a black thing. It's not about a white thing. It's not about a brown thing. We all here. I tell people all the time, if you can't get along down here, how are you going to think you're going to get to heaven? You're not going to heaven if you can't get along with a person here. So, James, I'm sorry.
Oh, let me tell you, I'd like to say, you know, whenever there's things going on, you know, that aren't as positive as I'd like to. I keep saying, okay, St. Peter, this is my way to ask you to please help me get in. If I do this, if I endure this, will you give me credit so I can get into heaven? So,
well, you know, we're going to do all we can because I know we have to. That's what we're put here for. But I want to thank you again. I mean, I just love what you do in the community. And you look for a call. I don't know, whenever you have time on Tuesday while I'm in Fort Worth, I would love to meet with you. Just, you can text me what time you have.
Okay.
And we can take it from there. But I want to thank everybody tonight for tuning in. Make sure you tune in the same time next Thursday. This is worldwide. So the government works. The federal government is worldwide. So if you're in Kentucky, we had people from Kentucky, California that called in and told us that they listened to us there. So what we're doing, and this next week will be the last week that we're going to be working with the small business. But the federal government is everywhere, all over the world. So this is for Texas. It's also set aside for California. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay.
Again.
Well, thank you once again for the opportunity. And, guys, you know, we're here. So if you got any questions, feel free to get in touch with me, and I'll try and answer them for you. So have a good evening, and best of luck.
And thank you. Thank you. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
God, it's been so good.
Good, it's been good enough.